This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 40% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale Last Chance right now and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It was never just handed to Michael Jordan every year.
Yeah.
There was no question LeBron. Who the best player. Yeah, there's no question who the best player in the game is, but is he having a more valuable season? And there's no way you can tell me that Michael wasn't the most valuable player in the league when he was with Chicago every year he played. If you took him off that team, they are bound for the lottery. There's just no way you can explain that to me. Did other guys have phenomenal seasons like Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, these other guys that won MVPs? Yeah, they sure did. There's no question. However, you know, you can't just give one guy the MVP every year according to, you know, mindset, which I don't necessarily agree with that either. If he's the best, he's the best. Beat him. That's the way it goes. If a guy's worthy of being a three-time MVP, you know, then he should be a three-time MVP. If a guy's worthy of being a unanimous choice for the Baseball Hall of Fame, he should be a unanimous choice, not guys sticking to this, I'm not going to mess with the integrity of the game, that's my job as a voter. No, your job is to give your opinion. And if your opinion of that guy is he's the MVP, or your opinion of that guy is he's an all-pro, or your opinion of that guy is he's the rookie of the year, then that's how you vote, not based on something else.
Eric, we appreciate it. Good luck tonight, my man.
Guys, thank you. I'll talk to you next week.
That is Eric Hastein. Grizzlies and Pacers tonight, pregame 5:30 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Tip off with Eric at 7 o'clock. All right, when we come back, let's get into the list. We'll talk about the college football playoff. Also, we have news from spring games and what that might entail. Also, want to talk a little about the Tigers profile. I might also do that with Jason Smith. But we'll do all that during hour number two. Stick around. This is Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM ESPN. The college football playoff. All right, Cobb. Cerrito and I talked about it a little bit yesterday. John Talty wrote up did a really nice kind of breakdown of the takeaways from, we just called it the New Orleans Summit. We didn't really know what to call it. We have the Big Ten and the SEC meeting in New Orleans. But it seems that when you lay the picture out, here's what we're looking at. It seems like the only thing that's on the table this year is seeding, correct? For the 2025 playoff.
Yes, and then thereafter, the whole thing can be blown up and rearranged.
All right, so let's go with 2025. Do you think that we're going to fix seeding? Because what I think is, if I'm the ACC, if I'm the Big 12, and honestly, if I'm the G5, why am I voting yes? Like, if you're Brett Yormark of the Big 12, aren't you sitting there going, like, seeding worked for us? I mean,
it could be a bargaining chip. It could be a bargaining chip now. Like, say, hey, we'll do whatever you guys want to do for the 2025 college football playoff if in 2026 and beyond, you give us X, Y, and Z.
And maybe that's what already happened, because I guess what you could say is, all right, we'll fix seeding. But, like, let's be real. Do you really believe that the ACC and the Big 12 deserve two automatic bids?
And no, so, and maybe, emphatically not.
And maybe that was
emphatically
the
not.
And maybe that was
I don't know why the Big 10 and the SEC are going that direction. Why are they boxing themselves out of more potential bids that they could get by guaranteeing four automatic bids combined to the ACC and the Big 12, another one to the G5, leaving the door open for Notre Dame, and essentially saying, you know, we'll be happy if we only get eight between our combined two leagues. Well, I mean, the Big Ten and the SEC have amassed such football power and football brands that they could very easily have more than eight of the top 16 teams in college football. If they were willing just to say, hey, you know what, we're going to go by the rankings instead of doing all this automatic bid stuff, the Big Ten and the SEC could theoretically get 13 or 14 combined teams in the college football playoff if it's going to be 16 teams moving forward. So I don't understand why they feel the need to do the automatic bid thing in the first place.
So you tell me if you buy this. My working theory is, if you're Tony Petitti, and Sankey comes up to you and says, we got to talk about bids. If you're Tony, aren't you going, what do you want to talk about? It worked for me. I got four. Like, I got the most. Like, I don't know why he would be super motivated. Now, if you're Sankey, this is what I find interesting. Is this a tacit admission that you recognize, hey, unlike these other leagues, almost every team in my 16-team league is insane about football and is spending at a level trying to win. Doesn't mean they can all do it, but they're all spending at that level. Therefore, we're going to have a lot more parity in our league than we do, because I think that's kind of the other story of the Big Ten this year. Like, what was it? I believe until Michigan beat Ohio State, the top four Big Ten teams only lost to each other. And it really stratified nicely.
Oh, yeah. They separated from the pack in a significant way.
Correct. Whereas the SEC, like, okay, Georgia's two losses are Bama and Ole Miss. Texas's only loss was to Georgia. But then after that, every team that was in the running had a loss that you'd be like, wait a minute, what? And so,
yeah, I mean, there was a whole agglomeration of 5-3 teams in the league.
So I think maybe this is a tacit admission of, if we can't get the automatic bids, our league is getting judged as if it's the same as these other leagues. And we know that it's more likely, it's going to be a lot harder to have a gaudy win-loss record in the SEC, but we are still trying to make sure we get as many teams as possible.
Yeah, I would submit back to that if you go and look at the final college football playoff rankings of the 24 season, if you just go the top 16, I mean, the number of SEC teams that would have made it would have been, seven? Because you had the three who made it, and then you had four more who were all within the top 16.
I guess so, the question, though, is, and this is, because I kind of, when I really do say I'm kind of coin flippy on it, I really do mean it. I think there's an argument to be made if, it's a lot easier to rank somebody 13, 14, 15 when you know it doesn't really matter. And
but you think if the committee were going to be actually deciding playoff bids in that range, they'd be more likely to put in who?
Well, like, I think it's possible that we could have seen, like, maybe the three-loss SEC teams would have gotten treated more harshly in our rankings if it mattered. And I think the design of this is, because I actually think Sankey was telling the truth when he said this. The 14 playoff worked for me. And that was his whole deal. It was like, if I was only worried about the SEC, it'd be the 14 playoff. And there's some truth to that, because I think the argument is the 14 playoff worked for the SEC more so than any other league. I would also, though, question whether or not those are related. Like, does that work because that's the period in which it begins with Mike Slive telling everybody, stop turning each other in for cheating, turn everyone into me, we're going to handle it internally, we're not going to have half our league on probation and ruining our chances.
So it just means more.
Correct. And then also you factor in that's still the under-the-table era. And I'm not someone that believes the SEC was the only schools doing it under the table. What I do think is entirely possible, though, is I am not sure that the SEC schools that are used to winning at the highest level, if they can max out at the level of Larry Ellison decides, I don't really care about football, but my wife does, and she says they need a quarterback. Here's $15 million.
Well, my whole thing is if it expands to 16, the depth of the SEC will shine through. It should carry the day. They shouldn't have to worry about automatic bids. If it had been 16 teams and the only 16 who got in were seeded 1 through 16 based off the college football playoff rankings, the SEC would have had six teams in. The Big Ten still would have just had four. So I don't understand why Greg Sankey is willing to concede or even put himself on the – I mean, if the SEC is as dominant – as Greg Sankey often projects it to be in college football, I mean, he should be willing to say, puff out his chest and say, no, we're going to get five automatic bids and the Big Ten's only going to get four, right? Because, I mean, his history shows that the SEC would have had more bids over the course of the last 15 years in this format if that were the case. So,
I guess
he needs the Big Ten on his side to ramrod all this stuff through.
Yeah,
but
there's no question
at the same time.
He needs that for sure. I guess this could also be the argument, and this is a little more... people would say cynical. I just would view it as, I think this is the way that business works. This is how you address the problem that you perceived this year, which is, like, I do know this. Many SEC coaches were very upset that the SEC was not really represented by football coaches on the committee, and that there was no one in the room going, y'all, I get it. We're parsing through teams that have similar resumes. But going to Norman, Oklahoma in November on a cold night is not the same as going to West Lafayette or going to, you know, Evanston, Illinois, or going to Stillwater. Like, it's just not. And there was no one to point that out and to also be like, hey, 15 of these SEC rosters are $10 million or more. Like, that's a level that we don't see. And so there was no one to kind of steer it that way. And so I think this is a way of, all right, let's make sure we don't have a situation like last year where we end up being on the wrong side of a coin flip. Let's set a floor that makes sure that we get to that. And let's also be real. We have complete creative control. The SEC and the Big Ten have creative control, which is a funny thing to say about a playoff, a football competition. But they have creative control starting next year. We'll just change the rules when we need to change them again. Like, we're giving the ACC and the Big 12 two bids for now.
Well, I think the ACC and the Big 12 should be thrilled at that.
Right. I mean, yeah, I think that you're probably onto something. Like, we get seating change this year and they got their back scratched. Because if I'm Petiti, I'm sitting there jumping for joy. I've seen some ACC people that are a little upset. They're like, well, what if Florida State, Clemson, and Miami all figure it out?
All get good again? Okay. It's you seen what happened to your basketball conference? Well, that's what should be what the ACC is afraid of.
And when has that ever happened?
No, exactly. I mean, the ACC is – that conference has a lot of problems and is going to be competing with one arm tied behind its back for the next 11 years because of the media rights deal with ESPN. So – they should be jumping for joy at the fact that they're going to get two bids in because they very narrowly got two bids into this year's 12-team playoff because a lot of the SEC folks would have submitted that Alabama, South Carolina, or Ole Miss, or all three of them deserve to be in the playoff over SMU. And then look at the Big 12, right? I mean, they ended up with Arizona State, and that was it. So,
well, here's a take.
We're expanding the playoff by four teams, and yet potentially doubling the amount of ACC and Big 12 teams that are in it, that shocks me that the Big Ten and the SEC were willing to do that.
I'd say this to Bud Elliott's face. Here's my take. The Big 12 is a better league than the ACC in football. Top to bottom.
No, you're right.
It was a much better league. And what we kind
of
saw...
the bottom of the ACC is dragging the whole conference down across the board.
It's like,
basketball
it's like the...
football.
Well, it's not even just the bottom. It's like the mid to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this is probably the other probably aspect that's getting weighed. Do we really think there's not going to be any more conference realignment, any more expansion? We really think these leagues are going to be as is?
Well, if that happens, what are you suggesting? Like, if the Big Ten or the SEC add members, then they have license to renegotiate the format? Because if they're going to add members, then it's even more dumb that they box themselves into only getting
three automatic hits. Think what they'll do, though, is they'll add members, and then they'll take away, like, they'll say whatever. If the ACC loses, like, let's say theoretically the ACC loses Florida State, Miami, and Clemson, well, they just lost the entire football power, and they're also going to lose Carolina, likely. You know, who else in the football category? Like, I don't know if that matters. But if you start losing all the football schools that matter, well, why is you're just going to take away their bid?
Well, then that league becomes the AAC. That league becomes the
I think this is probably was. This is like a, all right, we're trying to make sure that we don't wind up in a situation like last year, but we're also trying to do it by not just saying we're starting our own thing, but in reality, the Big Ten and the SEC are starting their own thing. This is the other question, though, that I had. And I know this is not answerable, but envision a world where Carson Beck doesn't get hurt. I don't think Georgia was better than Ohio State. I want to be very clear about that. But I think Georgia beats Notre Dame, and I think Georgia beats Penn State. So they get to the game. Let's say Georgia put some game pressure on Ohio State, and we saw Ohio State a couple of times this year have game pressure. Like, I think part of the Ohio State story in the playoffs is like they never let game pressure really develop. They just killed people early. And so we didn't see them get tight. They got a little tight against Notre Dame when Notre Dame woke up in the third quarter and said, all right, we just got to start chunking it.
Yeah, Ohio State played from ahead the entire playoff. They got pushed a little bit in the end by Texas. They got pushed a little bit in the end by Notre Dame, but they were playing from ahead.
Right. Yeah. But let's say Georgia wins that game. Are we doing all this?
If Georgia wins that game, I mean, the SEC is out there waving the flag, and Greg Sankey's getting lambasted right now for presenting a plan that puts his league on equal footing with the Big Ten. And honestly, I think maybe he should be anyway, because, I mean, everything about the last 15 years in college football screams SEC dominance. And whether you subscribe to that notion or not, I mean, that's the era that Greg Sankey has originated from. And yet here he is ramrodding a proposal that is shockingly equal. Like, if I'm a SEC football diehard right now, I wouldn't be thrilled with this. Regardless of what happened in the playoff. The reality is, though, this past season was not great for the SEC. I mean, you can point to Carson Beck's injury and say that's what derailed Georgia, but they had a lot of problems outside of quarterback play. And the league as a whole was down.
They did. I guess let me ask you this question.
What you got to lean into then in that case is security.
Let me go back to your Georgia point,
and they're not doing that.
I want to go back to your Georgia point, though. Georgia eye test, I agree with you. That was not like the, oh my God, Georgia team. If Georgia plays Texas's schedule, I think that we're talking about Georgia passing the eye test.
True. And because they played crap schedules the 2 years they won the
Natty. Correct. And that's and last year, like, Georgia's schedule, like, I get why Kirby was upset. Like, their schedule was ridiculous compared to what everybody else had to play. Now, this is, because I agree with you. Like, hey, sometimes the schedule works in your favor, sometimes it doesn't. The biggest problem that I have with all of this is that I don't think format is what the biggest problem is. I think the biggest problem is what they're not addressing. The unbalanced schedules throughout the leagues is the biggest problem.
Indiana's schedule this past year was laughable.
It
fully explains why they made the playoff. They're not going to make the playoff in 25 because they actually have a somewhat more difficult schedule.
Right. And so there's no desire to really fix that problem. In the end, I think I would just say, all right, sign me up for it, because if this is the path to getting the SEC to nine game schedules, sign me up.
Yeah, it's long overdue. It needs to be done. But I hate what this has become. Like, all we're doing is trying to make imperfect solutions to problems that we created.
Yes.
Was it really so bad when we had regionally aligned conferences that all had a relatively equal share of the nation's best teams? Was it really that bad? Because all we've done now is create more problems. And no matter what way you try to solve
them, we've created more problems. I guess I would say this. We've created more problems, but we have also made a bigger television product.
And if that's the end-all be-all, then I guess we're succeeding. But why is that the end-all be-all, man? It's and what was always we were told in amateur sport, that should never have been the objective. We let the whole thing slip away and become a product of corporate greed. That's the issue with college sports.
The other issue is it's become such a massive business, but it's also trying to lie either to itself or lie to its audience that it's something that it's not. It's like, yo, it's professional sports. We can talk like there's legal problems and schools don't want to say that they're employees. I'm also not convinced players actually want to be employees. They have complete, utter free agency. That always gets left out of the equation. If I'm a player, why am I voting to be an employee? Like, hey, man, I can go and leave as many times and get paid as many times as I want. Why would I not do that? Like, in the end, contracts exist to protect teams and the leagues. Like, if you're the players and you're sitting there going, like, well, no, why would I want that? But I think the other issue that I keep seeing throughout all of this is we don't want to call this what it is. Like, it's becoming mini NFL, except it's not taking the structure and the organization of the NFL, and it's essentially trying to copy an NFL model while letting kind of everyone do what they want to do. And that's why you see where we are. The other thing that I'm curious to know what you think about. So there's the reimagining of Conference Championship Week. I'm not as sold as it happens, because I think what gets left out of this conversation is people don't realize that these events are pretty much as All-Star Weekend is to the NBA. Like, part of the problem of, like, I'm telling you, like, you not being honest about where your product is. NBA is not getting rid of the All-Star game because, like, that's their convention. They don't have a Super Bowl. They don't have a fixed site where everybody meets and they conduct all the business at a neutral site that's predetermined. So the All-Star game is their thing. For conferences, it's become, that's what it is. I'm just not sure you can make it the be-all, end-all if it's the SEC play-in versus, or the SEC play-ins versus the SEC championship game. And then the other thing is, like, man, all these ideas feel like we're just creating more and more games, which I get it. I'm going to watch. I'm going to love. I started to get fatigued this season. And, like, I do wonder if that's getting ignored. Like, are we making the season too long?
Oh, yeah. Well, no doubt about that. There's no question the college football season drags on too long. So if we're going to have conference championship weekend at all, at least make it mean something. At least this play-in idea where you'd have the number three team and the number four team in a conference play each other, whatever it would be to figure out who your automatic qualifiers would be for the college football playoff. I'm a huge fan of that over having a meaningless conference championship game, because we saw the winners of the conference championship games in the Big Ten and the SEC went out and flopped in the college football playoff. And, you know, they were already in anyway, but they put it out there on the line for old conference pride and then got zero return on that investment in the college football playoff. So at least if you structure it as some sort of a play-in system, there's something realistically at stake. But if not that, then just eradicate conference championship games altogether. Start the college football playoff that week. Get the thing over with before late January, for crying out loud. I mean, the season is way, 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 way too long at this point.
It's kind of why, though, I don't think they're going to go to 16. If you go to 16, then, like, think about that. Then the play-in teams are going to play all, you know, I guess everyone plays the next round, but it's like, 16 feels like too many. Like, let's be real.
How 16 plus the conference play-in thing. I mean,
how many good teams?
You'd literally be playing five playoff games, essentially.
How
six,
many good
maybe.
Teams do we see in a 12-team playoff?
Yeah.
Two,
just put the three. Put the whole cat back in the bag and bring back that BCS for crying out loud.
Listen, your boy has been on record. The BCS worked.
I'll say this. I like the 12-team playoff because I think it heightened the regular season for more teams. I just think we got to condense this thing a little bit. I don't love giving Army Navy a whole week to themselves. I mean, that's just silly. That's just a waste of time. So, I mean, what are we doing here? Get the thing going. Play the games. You know, college football has no business lasting until late January. I'd say this as a college basketball person too. Like, you know, I love what I do on the college basketball side, and it gets diminished when people don't even pay attention.
Yeah, I don't
until
even
after the Super Bowl because. You know, football is just.
I think we also saw that, like, it gets swallowed up by the NFL playoffs, too.
It does, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't really need to go much past wild card weekend. When you start getting divisional weekend, it just gets swallowed up. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk some Tigers and Grizzlies. We'll do that with Jason Smith next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Signature Farms chicken, split breasts, drumsticks, or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Or a wheat variety bread, 24-ounce selected varieties, buy one, get one for free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And Progresso soup, 18 to 19-ounce selected varieties, buy two, get three free of equal or lesser value when you buy five. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. Follow him on Twitter on X at JasonSmith929. Jason. If I offer you a 7 seed for the Tigers, would you lock it in?
Yeah, I mean, wasn't you I was listening to, or maybe someone else on our station, on our great station recently, that pointed out, you know, we've had some 7s recently make deep runs.
Yeah, those make.
I thought so. I thought, what was the most recent?
So what's interesting, Cobb, I don't know if you know this. If you go by seed, so I started in 2010. There have been 3 7 seeds to make the Final Four, 0 6 seeds.
Yep. I remember. I listened to you. I listened closely to you. If you didn't know, there should be evidence
South Carolina. Of that. South Carolina might be the last one. Hold on, let me pull it up.
I'm just gonna do it because it keeps me out of 8-9. You know,
I agree. I'd rather be a 10 than an 8 or 9.
And when you add the context of what sevens have done recently, and especially compared to sixes, I'll just go ahead and do it. I'd love to sit here and make you the case that no, they'll still get a 6. They'll run the table. Let's just lock in 7. You're out of the 8-9. You don't have to face a 1 seed second round. Let's do it.
So 6 seeds, Cobb, have a better overall win loss record since 85, but
to be expected. Yeah.
They also have 7 seeds have more history of making the big run. So the last 7 seed is South Carolina. That was back in 17. Michigan State made a Final Four as a 7 seed in 2015. And then,
hey, FAU made it as a 9 seed in 23.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there. That 8-9, it doesn't have to be the end. And they went through Memphis, right, to get there. So, I mean, let's be real. That's on the table. I mean, you lose another game, you got to imagine you're in that 8-9 game on a lot of the bracketology.
Oh, it's very much a possibility and a reality, and that's why I think, you know, locking at 7. I want to stay away from that 8-9. You know, FAU should have had to face Purdue just like Memphis would have had to. What you had was the historic 1-16 upset there, and it opened that door up. Now maybe FAU does it. Maybe they go and upset Purdue there. But typically, no, you don't want to be in that 8-9 spot because most years it's going to be what it was for the Tigers, 3 years ago or 4 years when it was Boise. I mean, excuse me, it was Gonzaga after you knocked off Boise, right? And so, no, that's not where you want to be. Yes, it can be done, Cobb, but I'd rather not because most of the time, let's face it, it's going to be the one that you're having to go through. FAU didn't have to do that year.
Well, yeah. It's massively dependent on which one you get this year. I want no part of Auburn, right? Like, keep me as far away from Auburn as possible.
1,000%. 1,000%.
But I don't want any part of Florida,
to be honest with you.
Hypothetically.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some ones that you'd feel better about. Alabama's lost 2 straight. They can't stop anybody right now. I mean, P.J. Haggerty would rip them to shreds. He'd go for 30 against Alabama right now. So, like, it is matchup dependent. I don't necessarily ascribe to the notion that you're just completely screwed if you end up in the 8-9.
Yeah, no, you're not. And that's a discussion we may very well have to have, Cobb, because what it's been Memphis's plight the last 2 times it's been in the tournament in that 8-9 slot. And we know they don't think much of the AAC. But I think we had sort of hoped our way out of, and especially based on what they've done in the non-conference, and especially when, I mean, you consider the fact that it's still only 2 losses in the AAC. This is still Penny's best start. At least in terms of the AAC, you'd have to go back to Josh going undefeated through CUSA to find a better start. Then you got to go back to Cal. And so it's unfortunate that Memphis is in this position where you could have a good season on paper and still be in the 8-9, but we'd rather not have that conversation, Cobb, until we have to. And so we're hopeful, you know, you run the table the rest of the way like you should. Obviously, that game at UAB, you figure, especially the way you handled them here, is going to be one of the if not the toughest, one of the toughest for you. And then go win your conference tournament, and I think we won't have to have that conversation about which one we think is the most beatable. But, yeah, you'd like to think that they'd sort of graduated from that, but that's what's, you know, you don't take care of business up against Wichita State and you find yourself in a precarious position where you could be right back to it, no question.
I think another thing that, Cobb, you tell me if you – like, I'm just looking at this anecdotally. If you just look at – the net ratings. I think Memphis is obviously the quad 3 losses are hurting them, but I think another thing that's also hurting is that the, let's see, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee, Bama, Wisconsin, Kentucky, Missouri, Maryland, Purdue, Texas A&M, Michigan, Michigan State, Illinois. Of the 19, it feels like there are way more Big Ten and SEC teams in, like, the top 20, and so it's kind of pushed everyone down. Like, I'd be curious to know, does Memphis's net rating in last year's college basketball, are they still 48th?
Good question.
I doubt it.
Cobb, here's what I'd ask, because you can take this national. When it comes to the net, like, look at the fact, and Eli Savoy was pointing this out this morning, so I don't want to act like I did all the digging here. But I think in the comparison he made with Memphis and with Boise State, you make the absolute best case for how flawed the net is right now and how it either needs to be adjusted or the NCAA selection committee should pay less attention to it. We know it's not the only thing. Clearly, you got KenPom, you got the net. But go look at Boise State's body of work and then look at Memphis's. Boise State, which is, what, two spots ahead of Memphis in the net. The fact that Boise State has a quad three, Memphis does have two, not three anymore, but two, but also a quad four loss. Boise State is also 2-5 in quad ones. Memphis flipped, Memphis 6-2 in quad ones. And yet Boise State, because apparently there is so much of an emphasis, too much of an emphasis, I would tell you, Cobb, on beating bad teams by wide margins, Boise State is higher at the net with a body of work that's clearly not as good as the Tigers. And again, if you want to throw the two quad three losses in Memphis's face, which you can do, they've done that, I would point back to Boise State's got a quad three, a quad four. They lost to the San Francisco team on the road that you've got a quad one victory for now. So again, if nothing else, the net itself, there is at least too much of an emphasis on beating bad teams. Selection committee used to like to sell you, we love teams that go out and schedule, right? Schedule tough non-conference opponents. Memphis went out and scheduled the fourth toughest non-conference schedule. It's what you're supposed to do. They go out there and you're 10-2, combined in quad one and quad twos, and find yourself, it's 10-3 now, excuse me, because Wichita State loss becomes a quad two. Still 10-3. One of the best records in terms of winning percentage against quad one, quad two, and they're at 48 behind Boise State. Now, that's a flawed metric. And I think, again, I'd give Eli the credit on this because I think it's using those two resumes right now as they currently stand up that just underscores how ridiculous the emphasis on winning big against bad teams is. For the net.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And it's not just a Memphis conversation. That's an issue that a lot of people around the country Big 12 last season. Iowa State and some of the Big 12 teams that were juicing the metrics last year and getting all the love in the advanced analytics because they were beating the SWAC teams by 50 in November, right? It's like, what did you prove? Meanwhile, Memphis is out here with a resume that continues to get better every single day. We see Missouri taking down Alabama last night. I mean, it has held up remarkably well. I agree. They're not getting enough credit for what they did in November, December.
So I looked 100%. It up. This year, the Big Ten and the SEC have 13 of the top 19 nets. Last year, 6 of the top 20. And so what I think's also what's – and so that kind of has a downstream effect because also those teams are good – anyone that plays those teams gets credit for those. And I think this is kind of – Mark's got a story, and I've been teasing it, so I need Mark to release it at some point. Mark's got a story coming up, and he's going to speak with all the people that are doing the metrics, the Bart Torvicks, the Ken Palms, and all of them have the same deal of like, listen, we're not comfortable with the fact that it's being used like as a crutch. Like they all kind of – they all agree – what happens on the floor should get more weight. My working theory is that this era, we're getting the right teams in at a higher frequency than we used to. I still don't think we're seeding them well.
Well, Memphis is going to be, based on what it's done, and assuming, again, you don't drop the ball the rest of the way, get to 3 or 4 losses, hell, just make it simple and win out the rest of the way. Memphis is showing how what you're saying, you would have the seeding completely incorrect on this. You would be basing it too much on the metrics and not on what your eyeballs tell you. And to go back to the point, what the selection committee used to sell as the way we weed through our teams, what we hold in high esteem and what we don't. Because if you're Penny Hardaway, you can't do much more when it comes to your non-conference schedule. You can't max that out any more than you already have. Your fourth toughest, to Cobb's point, the rest of the teams that have a schedule like yours, non-conference, are SWAC teams that have to take bye games. You know what I'm saying? There's no teams of Memphis' caliber up that high. So you've maxed that out, and then we know you're in this AAC where we're asking you, if you want to stay top 50, you got to run it perfect. Like, that is fundamentally flawed in terms of what we've sold as, this tournament will have the 68 best teams, and we'll go about seeding them where they deserve to be seeded. So, Cobb, you're right. It's a national issue, but I think illustrating it right now is this Memphis team, especially when you compare it to resumes like Boise State. You know, better than anything you know that you could throw in the committee's face. So, my whole point would be, okay, this is the way we're going to do it. at least know, you know, you guys used to tell us it mattered when you watch these teams, what they look like, who they played. Well, if it still does, Memphis needs to be higher than the seven spots you got it in right now.
Well, think about it in these terms. Why do we care what you do against bad teams?
Exactly.
In every other sport, we act like what you do against bad teams is the mark of a fraud.
You're measured against what you do against the good ones, and Memphis's resume stacks up, especially win percentage in those opportunities. We know they have fewer because of the conference. Memphis stacks up with the big boys, even with the added quad two loss at 10-3. You still stack up with the big dogs, and you get no credit for that. It's unfortunate. It makes the job at Memphis, it does, more challenging, because essentially we're asking you to go perfect in this. Yes, terrible conference. We all agree is terrible, but that's asking far too much when a team like Memphis has gone out of its way to try to offset that with a, you know, pretty monster non-conference schedule.
Well, the problem is we're not just asking them to go perfect. We're asking them to go perfect and blow everyone out.
Yeah, there'll be a limit on that. Like, you're telling me all of a sudden we're gonna make them the top three seed because they've blown out Rice and stuff.
Right, because they was like, well, they haven't played anyone since December. No,
exactly.
So.
Then you're gonna go back to, man, it's a weak conference, it's the 10th rated conference in the country. So you're absolutely right. You've really put a seeding ceiling on Memphis that, albeit honest, when Cal was running it, when he was running, you know, CUSA, and there were years where he had a challenging non-conference schedule, but he would get the benefit of the doubt. They would still make him the one seed. Now, a lot of that was based on what he had done years before, but it doesn't feel like Penny can get back to that, even if he ran his conference in the way that Cal did all those years ago, where you could be in line truly for a, you know, a top seed.
Jason, we really appreciate it, buddy.
Call up Mark Few and see how he does it.
Yeah, there you go. That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. We come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, I go to Mark Bertelstein of Priority Sports, ironically the representation for one Bobby Portis, who received a 25-game suspension today. Bobby unintentionally took a pain medication called Tramadol, thinking he was taking a pain medication called Toradol. Toradol is an approved pain medication that he used previously and that teams and players use for pain and inflammation at times. Tramadol, however, is not an approved pain medication and was just recently added to the banned substance list this past spring. The Tramadol pill he took from an assistant of his with a valid prescription for the painkiller, which he mistakenly told Bobby was Toradol. This was, again, an honest mistake that was made because of the similarity in the names of the drugs and the fact that they both serve similar purposes. Bobby was using anti-inflammatory pain-reducing medication to deal with an elbow injury he had this past fall and believed he was taking Toradol to alleviate some of the pain for that night's game. Let me tell you what, nothing makes me believe your case quite like when your agent makes it for you.
Well, if the agent says it, it must be true. But hey, he represents Brandon Clark and Zach Edey, too. So
there you go.
We should be nice to him.
There you go. All right, Cobb, we'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
All right, sounds good, man. Thanks.
If you missed anything, be up on the podcast show after the program ends. For Dennis, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.